I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared creates collaboration, and collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face.
So my next interview is with Louis Theroux and John Dower, and we are talking about their recent film, My Scientology Movie. And direct quote from Louis, quote, it's a mashup of the U.S. Navy and McDonald's, close quote. That's not him so much talking about his film as he is talking about Scientology. It's a satirical film, and as John says, it benefits from Louis's renowned wit. There's a theatrical edge to this film that is really interesting. I mean, you know, all film, all art, I suppose, has a degree of theater, but the way they've crafted it, the way they've put it together is interesting. It's fascinating, and it's really quite the study, quite the absurd study, really, in I guess the human condition, in religion, in Scientology, in skepticism, and belief, and deception, and so on. So we talk about pretty much all of those things and in a fun and interesting way. I think you're gonna fall in love with Louis and John, and you need to get out and see this film. Louis Theroux, John Dower, coming right up. Don't forget davidpecklive.com for more information about my own speaking, writing, and podcasting. You can also get access to other interviews that I do at rabble.ca on face-to-face. And also, if you'd like to come alongside and support what I'm doing, you can do that through patreon.com. Louis Theroux, John Dower, and My Scientology Movie coming right up. Well, welcome to Face to Face. We're joined by a couple of very special guests here today, two filmmakers, two British, I think, filmmakers, John Dower and Louis Theroux, and to talk about a whole lot of things. And we've got a limited amount of time, and so let's just dive right in. We're here to talk about your film, about Scientology, a documentary. It's going to be airing at festivals, well, certainly in Canada, over the next several months. Maybe we can talk a little bit more about that as well. But I read somewhere online, Louis, it was referred to as a Pythonesque delight.
Yes.
Is that a fair comment about your film?
Well, I mean, I think that's a nice comment. We didn't set out to try and make a Pythonesque film. The reference, I think, is Monty Python.
Yes.
But it does seem to have been, it gets a very funny reaction. People laugh a lot. And I'd like to take credit for that. I think probably most of the credit goes to the Church of Scientology, right, which, whatever else may be said about it, is probably one of the weirdest and one of the funniest religions. You know, I think a religion created by a science fiction writer in the mid-50s and kind of modeled on a mashup between the US Navy and McDonald's with sci-fi UFO components just does have a sort of funny quality to it.
Okay, come on. A mashup between the US Navy and McDonald's may be the funniest thing I've ever heard of before. It's hysterical.
But that's what's so great about Scientology, you know, leaving ethical issues to one side, of which there are many. You know, it's propensity to break up families and arguably to destroy lives. They would disagree with that.
Right, of course.
But there is a very funny kind of weird combination of qualities. It's a cocktail of different things. And I think maybe it's in the nature of any religion. Religions are things we think of as being birthed in the sort of the Middle East 2,000 or 3,000 years ago with kind of berobed old guys wandering in the desert. Scientology was founded by this colorful writer with quite kind of aspirations to be the sort of Sigmund Freud for his generation and create a scientific instrument-based faith system. And just those things don't really go together.
Are you and John skeptics?
John?
Skeptics of Scientology or skeptic?
Just sort of, I guess, skeptics in more a generic term. I mean, I after watching your film, and I've seen a few things on Scientology over the years, and even as a kid, I remember, I have a friend who's a publicist who's fascinated by what they do and what they've been up to over the years. And I remember as a kid walking along, you know, Yonge Street in Toronto and seeing the Church of Dianetics and how you could go into this space and you could have the testing, what I've learned now, you know, of course, is auditing, et cetera, et cetera. But even as a kid, I remember there being a creepy aspect to it. I mean, maybe that's my experience. But anyway, as a kid, I was skeptical.
We definitely tried to approach it, particularly Louis, with an open mind. And we certainly didn't, as Louis said, set out to make a sort of satirical film.
Right.
And I mean, I was keen, given the subject matter, for Louis to approach it with some of his renowned wit and humour, which actually comes from, I'd argue, his slightly earlier work, especially his Weird Weekends. His more recent stuff here in the UK has been, you know, serious stuff, alcoholism, autism. And, you know, even on this, Louis approached it, you know, he would worry, you know, we're casting the head of the Church of Scientology. Is that blasphemous? Are we doing something, you know? We never, there's an English expression, taking the piss. We never wanted to set out and take the piss. And you ask if I'm a skeptic, I am. I basically believe we're a kind of cosmic accident, and in many days I peer into the sort of pit of my own abyss. I don't have religious belief, but I understand that need for belief, and I think we saw that in some of the sessions we did. You know, the right. aim, especially for Louis, was to try and understand what is seductive about Scientology. Forget, you know, the disconnected aftermath. We know about that. Yes, it's awful. But what's the seduction of it? People join it. Why do they join it? And we wanted to, you know, that was the reason why we did those training routines with Marty. And I think, you know, as someone who works in my field, you know, with actors a lot of time, you can understand the, you know, bear baiting is a good life skill in many ways. If you're a very nervous, not very confident person, and to get that dedicated glaze is a useful thing. So I think we didn't set out to let's take the piss out of them because they shout at ashtrays. You know, we wanted to, especially Louis, because that's his, you know, that's his modus operandi, is to understand how do good people fall into this slightly strange organization.
So it sounds to me, I don't quite get the expression, and I hold a UK passport, so take it from there, but you know what our colonials are like. So, Louis, underneath all your satire, your humor, your discontent, let's say, was there a degree of respect, would you say, for the folks that you were exploring?
I think in general, you know, especially if you're doing a documentary with people, you know, you have an obligation to take them seriously, to treat them respectfully. I mean, I tend to think all people deserve a degree of respect, and I think in the sphere of religion specifically, you actually have to ramp that up a tiny bit. You know, the present day reality is that across the board we have religions that make claims to special treatment, right? And that isn't by accident. You know, I think anyone who says, for example, you're told that, well, the Prophet Muhammad must not be depicted in cartoons. Now, on one level, you could say, well, that's silly. Like, we would depict anything. It's freedom of speech to depict anything. on another level, you've got to say, well, actually, this genuinely seems to cause ructions, riots, and unrest to the point where tens, if not hundreds of people are dying as a result of a cartoonist's choice. Now, I think to an extent, we have to extend the same sort of inquiry to the realm of Scientology, where people are saying, well, if you reveal the innermost secrets of Scientology in your documentary, that is blasphemy, and you are offending my religion, my most deeply held religious sensitivities. You have to start thinking about that. And I think it kind of, you, I think, mentioned, David, you're a philosopher, and it relates, maybe it's more theological, but there are these questions to do with rights and responsibilities.
Sure.
That are raised here. And I did go into this thinking, let's imagine it wasn't Scientology. In some ways, Scientology blocks thought because it's viewed as so ludicrous by many people.
Right.
It's been so sort of thoroughly had the mickey taken out of it. You know, it's been so mocked and lampooned that there's a temptation to see it as intrinsically laughable. And I did try to stop myself, to stop us as a production from taking cheap shots. You know?
Would you say, I mean, I've read somewhere, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on it, but I've interviewed Joshua Oppenheimer and about his film Act of Killing, and you said stylistically that was a bit of an influence, maybe, or maybe that was a review I read, but would you say that inserting yourself in the film, was there a humility to that, Louis, in the sense that, wow, you know, that Christian line, there but for the grace of God go I, that hey, we're all kind of, John described you as open. We're all sort of susceptible in a way.
I think we're all certainly, you know, flawed human beings, and it's a universal trait of human nature to sort of find it easier to see the flaws in other people.
Yeah, right.
See our own, right? I think also in the nature of the work I've done through the decades, it's always been about attempting to find people who are in some way marginalized or viewed as questionable, controversial, or even hateful, and forming a human relationship with them, that you start to see them as something more than caricatures. And then that forces you into this sort of area of almost cognitive dissonance, or sort of dissonance between your emotional and your sort of intellectual faculties. You think, well, hang on, this guy professes to be a neo-Nazi, and yet I'm seeing human qualities in him. I'm starting to like him a little bit. And then you have this rather difficult thing to face about what your human responsibility is to someone, and also how people who appear to be likable and good can get so off track, as I would see it.
Right.
And I think we tried to apply that here, didn't we, John? Because there's a temptation, especially because we didn't have conventional access
right.
to Scientology. So there was this effort we were trying to make to not be another documentary that basically just kind of told you for an hour and a half how silly or dangerous or predatory Scientology is.
Definitely.
I loved the moment when you guys were casting, I think it was McCavage's character, and the young actor got really pissed off and really acting, and I think you said, hey, are you in character, or is that just,
That was in the Tom Cruise casting.
Oh, okay, yeah, and then somebody said, you know, I'm tapping into my righteous anger.
Oh, yeah. That was the McCavage one,
He was very good, and impersonating an angry person in a way that was more or less indistinguishable from real anger.
Right.
Turns out to be a kind of revealing statement about Scientology itself. You know, a lot of it is to do with modeling or enacting certain emotional states and thereby becoming them.
And so, again, the device of the actors, I mean, on Louis' part, was partly inspired by the Act of Killing, although it's something that's been done in documentaries for decades.
Right.
But for us, it was almost a practical, logistical thing. First of all, it felt motivated. Here's a religion, you know, birthed in, you know, LA, Hollywood, by a guy who was not only a science fiction writer. You know, Hubbard wanted to be a director.
Right.
Had his own studio. He had a thing called Project Celebrity. Some of their biggest disciples are obviously A-list stars, so it felt motivated. But it was also key for the film because, first of all, we had no access. Louis never really done a film with no access. And also, Louis always at his best when he's operating in the present tense. So there was never any interest in doing a sort of retrospective style story, you know, history of the church.
Right.
That's not Louis' style anyway. So the sequences with the castings were really just a way of Louis being able to explore in the present tense, not only what might it be like being a Scientologist, but what it was like for Marty to have been a Scientologist, or to a lesser extent, Mark Headley. You know, it enabled, Louis didn't have to sit down in Marty's living room with a sort of vase of flowers framed camera right and say, so what was it like? Here, right. you were getting a sort of visceral in the moment feeling of what it was like by taking him back there.
Well, and I think, John, to that point, there was a real tension there at points. I mean, you know, sometimes it almost felt like it was written, but I didn't get that sense ultimately at all. That was there a pushback from Marty that, hey, you can't go there? I'm not going to let you go to this space. I'll be truthful and authentic with you to a point.
Yes. Well, one of the things I enjoyed about the film most was working with Marty and the kind of the ornery, rather almost cantankerous quality he has of not really suffering fools gladly. And he's also got this combination of being sort of down to earth and no nonsense, but also he's a spiritual seeker. So he's like this kind of really grumpy guru figure. And he was absolutely signed up to the idea of telling the story of Scientology. And I should say, by the way, Marty was, you know, one of the most senior people in Scientology for a number of years. He was the Inspector General. He really brings some gravitas and some real insight into the inner workings of Scientology. So the film is in a great part a kind of excavation of both his recollections of, you know, how Scientology works, its sort of almost mafia-like quality in the way that it would run operations with lawyers and private investigators. But at the same time, it's an excavation of Marty himself and his personality. And he absolutely sort of sees us as an asset in some ways in presenting the truth, but then it became clear that, you know, we were also on opposite sides of the table. You know, that I was as interested in unpicking him as I was in Scientology, in as much as he still embodies so much of Scientology.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Having seen it for so long and having been so critical to its development. I should add, I'm always aware when I'm talking about Scientology that there's a chance they're going to sue either me or you. When I say mafia-like, they would deny using any mafia-like techniques. Have I made myself legally non-liable now? Am
I? I think you are.
I can have my team of lawyers look into that for you, Louis.
Because, you know, and it brings us to an interesting point, which is that in the end, like, you can take all the UFO stuff, which is fun, the fact that they were founded by a science fiction writer, but at the core of it is this rather steely and scary organization that is willing to go further and be more aggressive than virtually any other religion that I'm aware of, and which makes it both fascinating because, you know, you think of religions as being touchy-feely, happy-clappy, kumbaya, turn the other cheek, and yet here's Scientology saying, like, we don't turn the other cheek. We will, if you come after us, we will come after you and attempt to destroy you. So that's fascinating. Also, it is slightly scary, and so that was perhaps the more troubling sort of
sure
conflict.
would either, you know, one of the thoughts I had, and I've certainly always thought of Scientology as a religion, but one of the thoughts I had while I was watching the film, can you really call it a religion? Is it a cult? You just used the phrase Louis, organization. You know, it seems on some level it's quite the corporation as well. Anyway, just
well, corporate characteristics for sure. And you know, I mentioned McDonald's. I don't think it's coincidental that Dianetics was published in 1950, the same year as the first McDonald's was established, and they are run in business terms along similar lines. So for sure, it has business-like corporate characteristics. I think it could be a cult and a religion. I don't think those two things are mutually exclusive. I mean, if it were not a religion, I'm going to put the question back to you, David. What would make it not a religion?
You know, Derrida says that religion without responsibility is utterly meaningless. And I'm not sure that after watching what I know, I mean, from what I know of Scientology, I would question the whole level of one's freedom, choice, and responsibility, which is essential to being human. And so lots of religions would deny that as a valid account of what it means to be human. But I think a religion that actually is about community, is about bringing people together, as you said, and the kumbaya-like nature of it all, would want to talk about freedom, choice, and responsibility, and that we are, you know, we're active. We're not like there's a sense in which it's not about me, it's about you in Scientology. Does that make any sense at all?
Certain amount. I mean, I do think separate, but you know, in a sense, that the biggest among the biggest victims of Scientology are those members of the Sea Org who are working very long hours for very low pay,
right,
to spread the message, to make the DVDs, to make the annual various annual events go off smoothly, to make sure everything at the interface runs smoothly for David Miscavige, to open the new orgs and the ideal orgs around the world. And, you know, I get the sense that those guys are doing it out of this deep, you know, feeling of idealism and self-sacrifice in order to make the universe, not just to make it a better place, to give the universe its only chance.
Yeah, its only chance. Otherwise, we are, in fact, going down in utter flames.
Yeah, and I almost, in a grudging way, admire the sort of the single-mindedness of the vision. In other words, we're so used to sort of slightly wishy-washy pluralism that there's something rather bracing about meeting people who say, who aren't saying, you know, do your own thing or whatever's clever. They're saying, oh, we've got all the answers. No one else has the answers. Not just the answers on Earth, but the answers for all the planets in the solar system, in the universe. And, you know, you're either helping or if you're not helping, then you're standing in the way. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of a forceful, rather bracing, almost totalizing vision, you know, that admits no doubt. There's no room for error. There's no margin. It's absolutely totalizing.
So, John, in a world of alternative facts, what does this tell you about deception? About this is a little more than just, you know, David Copperfield in a stage illusion or a really great, you know, Darren Brown in a great card trick. What does it tell you about how easily deceived we all are?
Well, I think that's been forever thus. I mean, right. The thing that stands out for me about science, which I kept finding to be, in some ways it's one of the most banal aspects of it, because it's certainly not spiritual, but it is those corporate elements, the fact that David Miscavige is referred to as chairman of the board.
Right.
The fact that it is a pay-as-you-go religion, you know, I mean, the thing that struck me most, which is why these films are traditionally, any Scientology documentaries are traditionally built around the former high-ranking, what are known as the apostates, you know, who've blown from the Sea Org. They've been up there. But I was always struck by that young guy in our firm, Steve Manger, and there's that moment where Louis says to him, so how much have you paid for all this? And
right.
I have to say, as a, you know, without sounding like some sort of filmmaking tosser, you know, I like to have a certain craft in what I do. I mean, I have to say, one criticism I would have on a lower level about Scientology is they make really bad products. They make really bad, kitschy, overblown, cheap films, DVDs. And Louis pulls out the box in this guy Steve Mango's house, and you see this collection of stuff that you'd normally see at a car boot sale or in a second-hand shop. I mean, it just looks like, you know, awful offcuts of products,
right.
And this guy's in for $50,000, and he's 21, and it's
wow.
That I feel is part of the card trick. How they're able to convince people to part with so much money so quickly to keep going, and they keep, you know, in some ways it's a perfect, you know, modern day product. You've got a bit of science, you've got a bit of religion. And it makes cash, you know.
Right.
It's the perfect American product in many ways. So you can see the seduction, but it's kind of, I find it that a very hateful element of
right.
it.
Right.
The just the amount of debt you can get in so quickly.
But I also think it's an interesting question to wonder whether Scientology would exist without the level of aggressiveness that it has. And, you know, there's many, many little cults or little UFO groups and that come and go and are never heard of again.
Right.
And I think, you know, I think the interesting it's an interesting question whether without the militaristic and rather authoritarian techniques that are used by used by Hubbard and have continued to be used by David Miscavige, whether it would just be gone by now. And more generally that, you know, you quoted Derrida, but I think it was Nietzsche who said that a good war can make any cause sacred, right? And
yes.
I think Scientology has sort of sacralized itself, has made itself sacred by sort of declaring war on all its enemies. And it may be that, you know, in the same way as Christianity's making was during the persecution it experienced under the Romans, you know, all the Christians that went to the lions, and then within, you know, a couple of hundred years, the emperor himself had become a Christian, right? And now we have Scientology that has been in an ongoing war, not a life and death war, but a sort of war of ideas, a war of propaganda with tabloids and media and so forth. And that sense of persecution, I think, has been hugely galvanizing for its most hardened inner ranks.
So, sadly, we have to wrap up in a couple of minutes. I know you guys have to move on to another interview. Couple last questions, if we could, guys. Is it growing? Is it dying? Is it resonating with young people? Clearly, militaristic, authoritarian edge. That doesn't play really well on social media. But, you know, what's happening there?
It's dying.
It is.
Sean says dying. I think not dying. I think, you know, the fact that they don't reveal their numbers suggests the numbers aren't particularly good. Having said that, they are constantly opening new, very flashy, sumptuous premises around the world. There was one in...
But they're empty.
Right, but the money is coming in.
I think, isn't that just their war chest? I mean, what Hubbard did brilliantly was he bought all this property... Which is prime real estate now. They own three buildings on Hollywood Boulevard.
Right, but they've still got a clientele that includes, you know, one of the richest actors in Hollywood, Tom Cruise. You've got people like, you know, Nancy Cartwright, who plays Bart Simpson on The Simpsons. You've got a guy called Bob Duggan, who's basically is a medical multi-millionaire who donates millions.
They do have those whales, don't they?
So they have people who are willing to open their pocketbooks. It shows, although if you read the critics, they'll convince you that numerically the numbers are down. And numerically it's true that Scientology has not got that many true believers, but financially they seem to be in rude health.
You know, John, didn't McDonald's make a ton of money also buying a whole lot of property? I seem to remember that from something I read a few years ago, not worth pursuing right now, but it's just an interesting observation. Louis, I think that this was a holy grail project for you.
Yes.
Why is that? And John, I hope we can do a part two, guys. I feel like we're just barely scratching the surface. But anyway, holy grail project. How come?
I think because it combines so many things that I've been interested in over the years, which is, you know, sort of religious fundamentalism, American culture, celebrity, Hollywood. But at the heart, it's a story about, you know, what people do, and you know, the irrational and apparently self-sabotaging things that people do to themselves and others in the name of faith. And because they're so secretive, and because they turned me down for so many years, it became a sort of dream project for me. And it's been... You know, just to finally kind of get it off the books, in a sense. Okay, we've sort of done it, and I feel like very, very satisfied.
It's not a good idea to turn down Louis Theroux.
And one last question: have you guys had to change your locks on your doors?
They did some shenanigans while we have reason to believe while we were filming. In fact, that features in the film. We were tailed by PIs that we assume were sent by Scientologists. They came after our contributors. I have not actually changed my locks. John says, and they came on set while we were not there, apparently. So
yeah, they stole our, on that very final, the whole reenactment, they turned up after everyone had left, apart from our sort of PAs and stuff who were tidying up the studio, and they just, those guys that turned up and harassed Marty in the after the whole sequence, the very last scene, the guy that looks a bit like Kris Kristofferson,
right,
and his pal, they came back, wandered into the studio, picked up the script, took the script with them. So they're not, and you saw them squirrel busting Marty on the other side of security at LAX. So they're not afraid of coming forward. But you know, joking apart, you know, it's people like Marty that bore the brunt of
right,
the busting and the harassment. It was pretty small beer for us, particularly me. I mean, for me, that was the beauty of doing a documentary with someone else in front of the camera. They were always going to go after Louis rather than me.
So your true colors are shining, John. That's a great way to end the interview. Guys, thanks so much for a fascinating film, a worthy project. It's playing at film festivals in Canada. We're going to get that up online for people to find out more about it. You want to tell us a little bit about your next project, Louis, or do we even have time?
I'm doing some more TV stuff. My day job is doing TV documentaries for the BBC. And then, I'd like to think about another feature, but, maybe my Scientology sequel.
Right.
They're supposed to be making a film about me. So I'm kind of curious about that. Maybe I could get on board. They were filming while we were filming. They were filming us going around, and they said that we're doing a documentary about Louis Theroux.
Wow.
So maybe I could get on board with that and help them promote their documentary.
Well, in kind, I hope you're not going to provide them with any access either.
No.
Make them work for it, Louis.
Well, maybe you're right. Yeah, we'll see. Thanks, David.
Cheers, David.
Cheers, John Dower, Louis Theroux, my Scientology movie. Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.